Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. We are super excited. I mean, I say we're super excited all the time, but really, we are. We're always excited for these interviews and to hear these different stories. Michaela and I feel like we get so much out of all of these. And this is another couple who we've never technically met before. This is Malia and Colt Johnson, right?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. See, we never really met. So a few weeks ago, I was laying in bed and I just typed in, I was looking at videos and reels and stuff, and I typed in hashtag Angels Among Us just to see what would come up. And Malia had posted a video of an experience that you guys had been through, and I thought it was awesome. And in my eyes, a real true angelic encounter. And we're excited for y'all to hear about it. I'm excited to hear it. I've just read the little blips about it. And I mean, it was
pretty.
How many views does that video have?
I think it's at 2 million.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, that's it. That's all. Just 2 million.
There's a video of my daughter killing a spider that's at 10 million. So I'm like,
oh my gosh.
You know. So yeah, the 2 million is just chump change.
To a spider. So.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. We're excited. And so go ahead and give a brief introduction really quick and then get going on your encounter.
So we're the Johnsons, and we have two daughters. So Scotty is 9 months and Della's 4. And then the way that we met was we met in the DC. We were both going to different missions. So I went to Omaha, Nebraska. He went to Columbus, Ohio. And we were in the same district at the Missionary Training Center. So
that's what MTC stands for, right?
Yes.
Missionary Training Center.
Anyone listening?
We went to Provo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we weren't doing anything crazy. Not going to Mexico or Peru. Or so we just, I don't know, those 2.5 weeks together, we kind of knew that we were going to end up together, I guess.
So there was lots of sparks, huh?
I was very attracted.
We did get in trouble once or twice.
Not for anything bad.
Just like, he got in trouble for like looking my direction like too long.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So it's a good thing you didn't serve in the same mission.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, that
it
that
was very hard. But we kept in touch, you know, lots of emails, letters. And then I got home, waited for him. When he got home, we picked him up from the airport, and then got engaged a month after that, and got married a month after that. So,
jeez,
very fast.
Wow, very fast.
It's a good thing it didn't lead to a divorce a month after that.
Yes.
Yeah, everything was pretty fast. 9 months after that, we got pregnant, and then we had our daughter, and then
wow.
9 months after? It was more than that.
No, we got pregnant 9 months after. And then she was born 9 months after that.
Really?
Yes, that's how it works.
That's, that's how it works. That's a healthy marriage right there. The woman part.
Yes.
That's awesome. So, Cole, if you want to just kind of like jump in like with your story, because it's incredible, you guys.
I'm all so right.
Your turn.
So Malia's aunt lives in Arizona, down in Casa Grande. And every year we go and visit her. We love it there. We love all the things to do down there and get away from the cold of Idaho, because it is very cold in the winter.
So we go every spring.
Yeah. So we go every spring.
And it's a very long winter.
It is.
Yeah, like 8 months
winter. Incredibly long winter. So getting out and getting some sunshine before it's time here in Idaho is a must. And so we went to visit her last year in May, which was a little later than we had gone the previous year.
Or years?
Yeah, years. And it was incredibly hot. But I was determined to go hiking. I told Malia that that's what I wanted to do one of the days that we were down there. And we had a couple things planned to go and do on our vacation, but we had a couple free days.
And don't forget, at this time, I was 5 months pregnant.
Yes, she was 5 months pregnant.
Wow.
At that time.
And we had a three-year-old.
Yes.
And this was your second time in Arizona.
It was my second time in Arizona.
And then the year before that, we went in the beginning of April, so it wasn't too hot.
Did you do any hiking the year before?
Yes.
Yeah, the year before that, we went in April. And then he just never experienced Arizona heat before. And yeah, middle of May to us is still pretty cold. Right. So that's kind of where his brain is when he thought, like, oh, I'm going to go hiking.
Yeah. And that first time that I went hiking in April 2 years ago, it was just at a local little mountain there that had a lot of foot traffic on it. So it wasn't anything crazy. I wasn't going out in the middle of nowhere like I did the second time. So
it was still hot, though, in April.
Yeah, it was still quite warm, but not, like, easily doable, I would say.
But for Idaho boy.
Yeah.
Really get out much. Outside of Idaho, Montana, Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
It was my little bubble. Anyway, so I'd looked up some of the hikes that I wanted to do around there. And Nikki, who's Malia's aunt, she had pointed out several different ones around, and I was like, those are too tame, you know. I wanted some adventure. And so I'd heard about the Superstition mountain range before, and so I started looking up that and looking at hikes around there.
Well, what did you hear about the Superstitions?
Well, the Superstitions are known for killing people, basically. Okay. A lot of people go missing and die there.
How many deaths
I can't remember. There,
it's like an insane amount of years.
Yeah, depending on what stories and websites you look at, it was like upwards of 50 deaths happened there a year.
Oh, wow.
For that reason.
That seems high to me.
No, that was definitely seems low.
So it's known for being this very rugged area, not a lot of foot traffic. It's right next to the, I think, Tonto National Forest. And yeah, just a lot of wilderness that has not really been that explored because lots of people die. So I was looking at like the best hiking trails there, and there's one that I was reading and it looked gorgeous, but then it was like a lot of foot traffic here. And I was like, nope, not that one. And,
but it's a lot of foot traffic in the winter.
Yeah. In the winter.
Mm.
Not when it's 110 mm-hmm. degrees. Yes.
Not when it's 110 degrees.
No, not even the locals go out.
So
to hike, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, I did that on a couple others too, where it was lots of foot traffic or fairly heavily traveled, and I was like, I don't want any of those. You know, I'm here for the adventure. I'm kind of an introverted guy. I like solo hiking. You know, that's my way to get. I feel closer to God when I'm out there, you know? So this time I felt a little too close, but I found one called Boulder Canyon Trail, and it said that it didn't really have any foot traffic. The author of the post had said that there was no one there when they'd gone out. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that one. And so I told Malia, I was like, listen, I think I'm going to do this one. And both her and her aunt were like, no, you should probably not do that.
Minnie, and my mother from Idaho was texting and calling. Don't let him do it.
I was like, I'm a man. I know better. No, just kidding. Just kidding. You can edit that out.
No, that's good.
No, it's perfect.
Yeah, I didn't listen to them at all. I was like, dude, I'm going to be fine. I go hiking all the time in Idaho alone, and I've never once died. I've never once been injured. Nothing bad has ever happened. Like, it's going to be okay.
That's a lie.
That was a lie.
His family's known for getting lost and, like, near...
We call it adventuring. And we've never once died.
I've been on some of those adventures... And we've at least got severely sunburned on one of them.
Oh, wow.
She's just born weak.
You're gonna look really bad, everybody.
It's okay. Our listeners listen. It's just love.
Yeah, it's just love. Love.
Yeah, it's just love, hon. No. So yeah. So I thought I'd be okay, and. Like I said, we had some random days that we weren't doing anything, so it was kind of pick and choose what day to do that.
But, yeah, it was weird because it was Wednesday, right? But, yeah, so he went on Wednesday morning, but we were actually going to go float the river on Wednesday morning. And the day before that, I had a feeling not to go on that floating trip. And so I was like, okay, we're not going to go floating. That means we have a free day Wednesday. And it was just like this prompting over and over again, like, no, don't go tubing. Like, which is, it seems so random. And it's still kind of confusing, too, because he still went. But I think if he didn't go Wednesday, he would have gone Thursday, and nobody would have been there to save him. So that's, the first miracle is that he ended up going on Wednesday, because I think there was nothing that was going to stop him, you know, even though we've told him multiple times not to go.
Hey, men can be dum-dums sometimes. I'll be the first to admit it.
Yeah, I got the IQ of a brick, so. Oh my
gosh. We blame his ADHD.
Yeah, so that was the first miracle, was that I even went out that day. Because, like Malia said, that was not on the plan at all. It was very last minute on deciding that I was going to go that day. But being the prepared Boy Scout that I am, I made sure that I had let Malia know where I was going, how long I thought it was going to take, basically the exact path I was going to be on. And then I had with me a survival kit, a water purifier, my gun, just in case. I didn't actually know what was down there, but I've heard there's jaguars down there and, you know, there's wild pigs and stuff like that. So I was kind of prepared-ish. I had a lot of food. I had what I thought was enough water.
I don't think gummy worms count as food.
Gummy worms are an excellent source of carbohydrates. I think.
They're sugar.
I had trail mix and stuff too, okay?
Oh my gosh.
How long of a hike was it?
So it was supposed to be a loop. And the loop for a hiker who can hike medium speed, basically, that they said it would take about 6 hours.
I call it a fast hiker.
I am a very fast hiker, so I was guesstimating more like 4 or 5. So I woke up early.
Well, the night before, he's like, I'm going hiking. And so, okay, what I told him was that I'm going to give you one last hug and kiss in case you die tomorrow.
Oh,
that's exactly
God.
What I told him. Gave him a hug and kiss. We went to bed. He got up at, 5 and left.
Yeah.
Well, I still told him, no, you shouldn't go. And he's like, well, I'll see you in the morning if I want to go or not. And he still left, so.
I didn't even think of staying. I just told her that to calm her down.
Yeah.
Like I said, pregnant with a daughter.
Yeah.
So I woke up at 5, I started driving out there, and you have to go through Phoenix from Casa Grande to get out there. But as I started getting closer, it was like a some windy back roads and it was very secluded. I actually saw a coyote, which was super cool. I viewed that as a sign that it was going to be a good day.
Oh, God. So
I got up there a little after six to the trailhead, and it's right next to a reservoir there, but there was no cars in the parking lot for the trailhead. And so I hiked out, I got all my gear ready, hopped out of the car, got all my gear ready, and hit the trail. And the first thing I noticed when it was kind of cool in the morning that there wasn't that much shade, but I was like, oh, won't matter. I'll be back to the car before 11. It'll be okay.
Right, because he said he'd be home by 1. And he also said, if I'm not home by 1 o'clock, something really terrible has happened to me.
See, I was prepared.
But also some backstories, he's horrible at time, and he's always, always late. So to me, I'm like, okay, if he's not back by 3, something horrible has happened.
Yeah. So I hit the trailhead. There was not any shade. And it had some pretty good elevation changes in it. So it'd go lots of up and downs. And so I started going, and there was no one out there. I could kind of tell that, I don't know, I just had a feeling that I was going to be alone on the hike. And I was like, this is awesome. This is beautiful. And for the first, like, 3-4 hours of the hike, everything was going great. I was going through my water at, like, a good pace to where I'd have enough for what I thought was going to be the loop back to the car. And
because you only brought how much?
I brought, like, 1.5 gallons.
And this is a man that normally drinks 4 gallons a day.
Jeez.
Wow.
You are amazing.
It's probably not good, but it's probably too much. I have a drinking problem. But
we're highlighting all your faults right now.
Yeah, we're highlighting all my faults. But no. The thing is, I just like drinking that much. I don't necessarily need 4 gallons. So I thought...
But your body's used to it.
That's true. I thought 1.5 gallons, though, would be plenty for the, you know, 5 hours that I was out on the trail. So I came around several bends. There was like a couple bends that kept gradually turning right, and crossed a little stream and ended up at this house that was kind of in ruins. It was like from what I looked up, it was an old mine that some miners had thought they were going to mine for like crystal or some weird thing there. And it didn't pan out because they got attacked by Indians, so they abandoned it. So it's just this little, like, homestead house that was super cool. Just had, like, couple crumbling walls left and an old bed spring. And so I sat around and explored that for a little bit, and it was really cool. But the problem from that is that there was several different trails that led off from that, because I'm assuming people from different trails had come to that. So after exploring for probably like 20, 30 minutes, I saw a trail, because there was no markers. I saw a trail that looked like it was the most worn down. And I was like, okay, I'm going to hit that. It's going to lead the loop back to the car. And so I set out on it, and I probably went like 2-3 miles. And at this point, because I had slowed down a little bit from when I first started hiking out, I realized that I wasn't going to hit getting back by 11. And, you know, I didn't want Malia to worry. So I was like, oh, maybe I should just turn around, because it's not turning, it's not curving back towards the parking lot like I thought it would. But because I'd hiked in so far, I just figured that I'd follow another stream that I'd found. Because my thought process was that the stream would lead back to that reservoir that was right by the parking lot. So I was like, I'm just going to follow this. It'll lead me back. And I still wasn't worried at this point. Like, the day was definitely getting warmer, but I still had water. I still had energy.
Yeah, and the whole time I was watching his little bubble on Life 360.
Mm-hmm.
And He said he had no service, but, you know, it at least pings the last little spot. So the whole day I was watching to see when he got there, when he started the trail, and then I think 11 o'clock rolled on by, and he said he'd be back by the car at that time, and I checked, and, like, he's still on the mountain. I was like, oh, maybe, you know, he's making his way down. And then...
Yeah. So I started following that stream. I don't know how long I followed the stream for, but it was ended up being a really bad decision because the first little bit of the stream was wide open. There's no bushes or foliage on the sides. Like, it was completely fine to keep going. But as I got farther in, I had to actually go into the stream, and there's a bunch of boulders in it. That I had to, like, jump from boulder to boulder, like leapfrog almost, because the trees and grass and stuff were so thick on the sides. So that started making me sweat way worse and making me lose a lot more energy. And so I did that for way longer than I should have instead of turning around. And it finally opened up again. But at that point, I was getting a little lightheaded. I was running out of water. Like, I was almost completely out. And so I actually took out my Life Straw water purifier and drank from the creek so I could conserve the last little bit of water for the hike out. But I came around a bend in the creek, and it kind of ended at this, like, sheer box canyon almost. And the water had disappeared into the ground somewhere. And when I saw that, I got kind of disheartened. I was like, oh no, now what am I going to do? Like, I'm not going back the way I came. That was miserable. And I kind of knew where the trail lay. And I thought that it was right over this mountain that had, like, shale rock on it. And so I was like, I'm just going to climb over this mountain. I'm going to find the trail again, and I'm going to head back the way I came. I was like, I'm just abandoning the whole loop idea because the loop did not turn out at all. So I started climbing that mountain. And the first real sign that something was wrong was I was taking way more breaks than I should have. It's not like I'm in amazing shape or anything, but I'm fairly athletic. You know, I'm in pretty good shape. And so the fact that I was taking all these breaks was a little worrying. And I should have mentioned this before, but I was wearing all black
because I'm oh gosh
because I'm gothic or something, I don't know.
But not just all black, like black shorts and then a long sleeve black shirt.
Yeah,
and a black hat.
So I don't really like sunscreen, but this shirt's one of those, like, UPF resistant ones. So that was my thought process behind that as well. I'm not just that dumb. I'm dumb, but I'm not that dumb, you know? So that was my thought process. Instead of bringing sunscreen along, I'd just wear that. And then I had a big sun hat.
Black sun hat.
So I was wearing all black. It was getting really hot. The day was only supposed to be like 95, right?
In Casa Grande. But on top of the mountain, it was like 110.
Yeah. It got really hot.
And we went from, it was a cold spring that year too.
Still snowing when we left, so.
Yeah, so.
Oh my gosh.
It was a very big heat.
Yeah, index. Nothing had been acclimated.
Yeah. So I had to take all those stops, and I was like, dude, this is worrisome. And that was when I first kind of started praying to God a little bit, was just like, hey, I'm sorry I'm dumb. Please help me out here. You know? I finally got to the top of that mountain, and it was miserable the whole way, because when I had to take all those stops, there wasn't hardly any shade. Like, I was resting in what little shade I could find from boulders that were on the mountain. And then it was just shell rock. So it felt like every step I took forward, I slid back to. So after fighting super hard, I finally got to the top. And I looked down and was able to see the trail. And I remember just stopping on top of the mountain for probably like 20 minutes just to catch my breath. My heart rate felt way out of whack. I drank quite a bit of my water that I had left. I was down to like one or two bottles after I finished drinking on top there.
Yeah, like the little bottles, right?
Yeah, the little bottles, just like the plastic ones.
That's like two sips for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after sitting there for 20 minutes, you know, kind of praying to God a little bit, I was like, okay, I'm going to be fine again. It's going to be all right. And I started hiking down the mountain. And I slipped and fell, which was also kind of worrisome because this side wasn't shell rock. Like, it was still steep, but I normally can keep my balance. But I slipped and fell, landed on a rock, and it ended up cutting my shorts. And I started bleeding a little bit from that, but I didn't think too much of it. I was just like, oh, it's a steep mountain. Of course I fell.
And you're kind of clumsy.
Anyways. And I'm kind of clumsy anyways. I got... She's airing out all my dirty laundry. I'm basically a mountain goat, actually. It was very shocking that I fell. At least me.
This is how I know you guys are going to last, because you can, you know, take digs and you just take it.
It's probably another, it's probably like another mile to the trail from the top of that mountain there. And when I got back to the trail, I was getting a buzzing in my ears and in my head and was just dragging, like, you know, in the cartoons when like the people get tired and they're literally like dragging their arms. That's what it felt like, was that I was like dragging my arms and my tongue was on the ground getting dragged. And,
I can see that too.
And your jaw.
Yeah, my jaw. Yeah, basically. And so I started back up the trail. And after about 20 minutes of hiking, I don't remember what happened. I just went blank. And when I came to, it turned out that I had passed out. And when I passed out, I peed my pants and I'd fallen on a cactus. So that's what I woke up to, was soaking wet drawers and cactus spines in my leg.
Oh my gosh.
So I don't actually know how long I'd been out for. But it took that happening for me to really be like, okay, I'm in trouble. And so at that point was when I texted Malia a text that was like, I need help. That's all I said, because my head was still ringing. My hands were shaking. I was starting to get like cold sweats.
But of course, there's no service. And that was, you know, last year we didn't have fancy phones or anything that does the satellite stuff. So I never got a message, and I just waited around for that little Life 360 bubble to be back at the parking lot, and it wasn't there. So that was 12:30 that he sent that.
You know, and you didn't get it. Yeah,
I didn't. I never got it. Never got it.
Yeah.
But because it was 12:30, and we saw that his little Life 360 dot was still on the mountain, we were kind of making preparations to possibly go out there and start looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
It is hot, and I was pretty pregnant, so my aunt was kind of like wary about that.
Yeah. So
we kind of waited a little bit longer.
She wanted the life insurance.
He didn't have any. He didn't have any.
And that's why I'm still here.
I didn't even think you could collect it on something like that.
No.
That would have been your own doing.
So anyways, I came to in that situation. And that was when I really started praying and just almost begging to God to like, please, I know I messed up. I know I shouldn't be out here how I did, but I don't want to miss my kids growing up, you know, especially with Malia being pregnant. I did not want to miss out on that and have them grow up without a father and not knowing their dad. And so I was just basically praying, and it could have been just that my mind was still foggy, but I just felt very calm after doing that. And not necessarily that everything was going to be okay, but that I was just at peace, you know. Basically, whatever happened, I felt at peace. And I had my gun on me, like I said, and I'd watched some shows and read some survival stuff. And so I knew that if you shoot your gun three times and then pause for 3 seconds and shoot it three times again, that's supposed to be a distress signal. So I was like, okay, if anyone's out here, I'm going to be...
I think only you know that.
No, I feel like other people know that, probably.
If they... I know that.
Yeah, thank you. See? Okay. See?
John didn't know that.
Though. John didn't, but... He's the one that rescued me. Anyway, so... And I carry a 10mm when I'm here for bear defense, so that's what I had with me.
It's pretty loud, isn't it?
It's quite loud.
Big gun.
Yeah, it is a big gun. Big caliber. So I shot that.
And how many times did you think you shot it?
I have no clue. I at least shot it 6 times, but I think I did that twice.
I think John said that he rested like another 12 to 18.
Yeah.
Shots.
That sounds right. And after I shot, I just kind of sat there. I didn't really have much effort for anything else. And I rested, and then after about 10 minutes, I kind of sat up a little bit more, started drinking the rest of the water that I had, because I'm like, I'm just going to try and get as much water in as I can right now, and then hopefully that'll give me enough energy to go. And then I broke out my snacks and started eating. And I ate my gummy worms last, because I was like, if I'm going to die out here, this is going to be my last meal. And so that was literally my thought process. I was like, they're going to find gummy worms in my system and know I went out like a man.
Oh my God.
In the autopsy. They wouldn't even do an autopsy. It's not a homicide.
Well, it could have been. Giant centipedes out there could have killed me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I ate the gummy worms and was like, this is how I'm going to die. And then I leaned back and rested my eyes. And like I said, there wasn't really any shade, so I was just still next to the cactus that I'd fallen on. I hadn't pulled any spines out of my leg because I didn't have energy for that. And I was just sitting in this like scraggly bush's shade. So a lot of sunlight was leaking through. And at that point, it was probably about 105, 110 out there.
Because it was probably like 12:45 or 1.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I'd turned to look down the trail the way I had come for some reason. I don't know why I did that. Instead of looking the way that the car was. But I started hearing some rustling, and I like kind of poked my head up around the bush to look at the trail. And I saw John coming around the corner. And he was smart. He was dressed all in a light color, had this really big light hat on. And because of how wide his hat was and the fact that the sun was right there, it actually did kind of look like a halo. I made that joke to him the next day after he saved me. But it looked just like an angel's halo. And he came around the corner and he was saw me and was like, oh, hey, you know. And he said that he'd heard gunshots, and he asked if I was practicing target shooting. And this was like 20 minutes after I'd shot the gun. And I was like, nah, man, I'm kind of in a bad situation here. I'm not doing so hot. And he said later that he could tell I wasn't doing good, but he didn't want to like intrude on my hike, basically. And so he asked like if I was all right and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And then he asked if I needed help, and my mama raised a gentleman. So me, in my altered state of not really thinking clearly after passing out, I was like, no, I'm fine. Like, I didn't want to interrupt his hike. I know how sacred that time is. But he could tell I was not doing good. So he just kind of sat there with me, and he ended up helping me up off the ground. And when I was talking to him, he said that's when he was really concerned, because he was a former firefighter. So he was trained actually in like EMT stuff. And he could see that I was very wobbly and
yeah.
So he
slurred.
Yeah, slurred words and stuff. And so he's like, dude, do you have any water? I was like, nope, drank it all. And he's like, do you have any electrolytes? And I was like, do gummy worms have those? And and so he just sat with me and was like, we're going to get you out of here, basically, is what he said. And once again, I was like, you don't have to come with me. You know, I can do this. I'm a man. And but he was smart enough to see how bad I was doing. And so we started going back up the trail towards my car. And he had technically been on another trail that just that little section. This is miracle number two, basically. That little section had been combined with my trail to go.
So he was on Battleship? Yeah,
he was on Battleship Mountain, which came like this and then intersected that little part of my trail. And then went up on another trail. My trail went back this way, basically.
So it's a good thing you made your way back to that.
Yeah. So getting to that point when John was there was miracle number two. And
you might, you should probably go into John's backstory of why he was there in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I should probably do that now. John was there kind of by happenstance too. He was not going to go hiking that day either.
But he felt prompted to go hiking that day.
But he had planned to go a different day and then had felt prompted to go that day. And he had even said he didn't know why he picked that hike. He's done it a ton of times. And his whole thing was he was trying to get out to see new places.
And he also overhydrated. He said he took like extra electrolytes and ate an extra big breakfast to prepare for this hike, and he said that was kind of out of character for him. And then another thing that he said was, like a year earlier, he moved to Arizona from Florida, and he went on a hike with his son, and he ran out of breath a little bit, and he said he felt embarrassed because of that, and so since that hike, he had been training with the Arizona firefighters to be able to get to the ability to hike in the heat and in the elevation and whatnot. And he tells people that the reason for all that preparation was strictly to save Colt's life.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Even though he's saved quite a few people in the past, and so we just thought like this isn't really anything different, because I mean he delivered a baby in a restaurant, he's fixed several broken bones, sprained ankles on hikes, didn't he like do CPR on a guy?
Yeah he's done a lot of amazing things on these hikes. If you ever have a chance to talk to him, he's really cool.
He's got several. He is the angel.
He is the angel. But
not just to you, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, not just to me.
But Colt was his like special case that he said was really mattered to him more than all the other people he saved for some reason.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was really crazy how, like, I don't know. I don't believe in coincidences, but there, you can't tell me that how this all lined up is just a coincidence either. You know, like, that was definitely divinely inspired. And anyways, the first little bit of the hike back, I felt like a turtle in mind and body. Like, my brain was going so slow.
And how far did you have left?
We still probably had like 5 or 6 miles back to the car.
Oh my god!
We were out there.
Yeah, the height of his heat stroke.
Yeah,
had to get back to the car.
And I was shivering really bad, which I didn't know was a sign of
heat stroke,
but I guess it is. So I had the spines in my leg. I was shivering. I felt slow. Like, my body felt like it was shaking, and my heart was going all sorts of wacky. Felt like it was beating super fast 1 minute, and next minute slowed down to nothing.
It's still leaking.
Yes, and still leaking. I was peeing my pants the whole way. Thanks, hon.
Yeah.
I had zero control over my bladder. It was just kind of crazy. Any liquid that I had just
exited.
Went right out. But John, like Malia had said, he'd overpacked, and so his water, he had a big backpack with the water in it. I forgot what they're called.
Camelback.
Well, Camelback's Camelback. A
brand, but everyone.
Definitely. But he had one of those that had electrolytes in it, so he kept feeding me that water. And he was talking to me the whole time because he was worried about me, but also trying to get to know me and see basically why I was in that situation. And so he's asking about like my wife's name, and he said later that he was really concerned with how long it was taking me to answer that, but he was glad that I was answering everything correctly.
Yeah, and he also, his daughter's name is
Malia. Yeah, his daughter's name is Malia.
And so he felt even more connected to Colt. And when he learned he had, you know, a pregnant wife and a daughter at home, he said, like, that was his one mission at that moment, was to make sure that he made it out alive.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah, Malia's not, like, super popular.
It is not.
Beautiful, but, man, holy.
Not a common name.
Yeah, so the fact that that happened was also pretty crazy. But I had to keep calling for stops for that first, like, mile to 2 miles. And it finally got to the point where I was dragging so much that John came and, like, put my arm around him and started going. And I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5". I'm, like, 200, 210 pounds. And John is a little guy.
He's like,
I'll have to show you a picture. He's like 5'5". he's a small guy. Very small. And he's pushing 60. So he's an older gentleman too, you know.
Very, very active.
Very active though. And so he started out with that, and at one of the peaks, because like I said, the trail went up and down. At one of the peaks, we ended up getting a little bit of service.
Okay.
And so he had texted Malia and said basically that, I have your husband. Don't worry.
Yeah, that was the first sign of life.
Yeah.
And at that time, we were kind of packing up, trying to... My aunt's like, no, just give it a little bit more time. Give it a little bit more time. I'm like, okay. Because I think he texted me at 1:30. So Colt said he was supposed to be home at 1.
Mm-hmm.
And he still wasn't off the mountain. And so that's when I was getting concerned. So finally got the text from John. And he was called me with the little bit of service he had, just to say that, you know, he had called. He was fine. He sounded very calm, not like worried at all. So I was like, oh, maybe, you know, it's not as bad as we thought. Because John just, I think, knew what to do in that situation. But later on, he did say he was very concerned for both of their lives. At that point, I did offer to, like, come pick him up and bring him, like, electrolytes and food and whatever. But John's like, oh, no, I think we'll be fine. I'll get him down and we'll let you know when we get to parking lot. So, like, all right, just, you know, waiting at that point.
And he was worried about his life because I drank all his water. And
although he did say that he felt really good, he didn't need any water, but just the thought of, like, I'm out and he's out crossed his mind.
And he said he wasn't going to leave me, so even if I had all his water gone, he was going to stay with me. So as the hike back to the car went, I kept putting more and more weight on him because I could, like, feel my body shutting down is what it felt like. Is that, like, I was a robot and someone had just hit the off switch and I was powering down.
Yeah, and John's like, I couldn't just leave him there and go get help because he knew when he got back that he probably wouldn't have survived.
Yeah, it was pretty scary to feel that, especially, like, I know the chills and everything are scary, the mind being blank, but the biggest scare to me was that I was peeing my pants the whole time. That I just had no control. That was really scary to me. And John talked to me a lot about himself and asked me a bunch of questions. And we still had to take breaks, but it was less and less. And then as we got within the last, like, mile or two of the car, it was the hardest thing I've ever done trying to hike out of there with how uncoordinated everything was and how foggy my brain was. And I was a little annoyed at John because I kept asking for breaks and he'd make them like super short because he knew that if I sat down, like went to sleep, that he was not going to get me back up. So I'd sit down and he'd come over and be like, "Hey, you good, man? You good? We got to keep moving." I was like, "Dude, I just want to sleep. Like, stop pushing me." And when we got down to where we could see that reservoir, I felt really good about everything because I was like, okay, I'm going to survive. I'm actually going to see my kids, even though I was super tired and had all of that happening to me. And we got down to the very end, and the trailhead from the parking lot, you have to go across this bridge where stream is, which is the one that I thought I was coming back down. And then the trailhead's on the other side here. So when John got down, he left me there at the beginning of the trailhead, and he took my keys to go get my car. And he got the car and came back.
Luckily, it was the only car there. So
it was the only car there, in fact, which is crazy. And so he got me in the car, and he kind of had to like pick me up and put me in, which I don't know how he did. Like I said, I'm way bigger than he was. And he drove me
to Apache Junction.
Yeah, to Apache Junction, which is a ghost town that's now like a tourist destination thing. Because that was the closest place to where we were.
Which was 20, 30 minutes. And our John said the AC wasn't working.
No, our AC was off. So he just unrolled the window.
It was too hot for our car.
Like, yeah.
I don't really remember that car ride because on the car ride I did like pass out or fall asleep or something. And so I didn't really wake up or come to until we were there. And he pulled me out of the car and dragged me into the
gift shop.
Yeah, gift shop there, and got me like 5 Gatorades. And so I just remember drinking that. Sitting underneath, they had like a little AC vent, and I was sitting underneath it, and everyone just kept looking at me super weird. And I was very conscious of how bad I smelled. I smelled like urine. I smelled like sweat. And so I was just sitting there, out of my mind, cactus spines in my leg, chugging Gatorades. And there's homemade fudge there, and the fudge lady took pity on me and brought me out a little slice of fudge. And John also got me some honey because honey's supposed to be really good. And so I sat under there probably for another hour just drinking my Gatorade, talking with John a little bit, being self-conscious, and pounding some fudge. And after that break and stuff, like I said, I'm in fairly good shape. So I started feeling better. Like my head was still spinning, but I felt like I was able to move a lot more confidently and stuff. And
did you stop peeing?
Yes, I had stopped peeing. I didn't pee inside, which is good news. Yeah, that would have been so bad. So after I started feeling a little bit better, John drove me to where his car was, and I was blown away by how many miles he had traveled from where he had parked his car. Because he said he started out about the same time as I did. And I did do some sightseeing, but nothing crazy. But he probably traveled like 10 miles to get to where I was or more.
But he's like a pro.
All over rough terrain, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. And so I was blown away. But at his parking spot too, which is a parking spot for 3 major trailheads, there was no other cars. We were the only ones dumb enough to go hiking when it was 110.
Well, John was going hiking to save you.
John was going hiking to save me. I was the only one.
That was his prompting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got out of the car and we talked a little bit more at his truck, and I got his number and gave him a big hug and was like, "Dude, thank you for dragging me out of there." And in that moment, I compared it to the Good Samaritan parable. I was like, "You did not have to do that, but..." And John's like, "As soon as I saw you, brother, and he called me brother, which was really, really cool to me as well. It's like, as soon as I saw you, brother, I was not going to let you stay there. Like, he said that he was going to get me out of there no matter what.
And he's a really cool person.
Yeah, he's a really cool person. So I got in the car to drive home, and I'm kind of surprised that I got home safe, to be honest. My head was all sorts of foggy, and I am a really bad driver, especially in cities. So going from...
With a clear mind.
Yeah, with a clear mind. So going from, like, Idaho Falls, which is our city that has, like, 60,000 people, to Phoenix...
Which is, like, a million.
Was quite nuts. So the fact that I was able to get back...
arrived in the city.
Yeah. The fact that I got back safe was another big miracle.
I did offer to come pick him up several times, but John said that he seemed very... He's like, oh, no, he seems good. He can drive home. And I'm like, okay, like,
so
I guess.
Yeah. But on the way home, I didn't listen to the radio or anything. And the whole time, like, going through my head was like, wow, I almost just died, you know? And just basically thanking God for answering my prayers and hearing my prayers and for sending John to... rescue me. So I got home. Malia picked the cactuses out of my legs. There's a lot of I told you so. A lot of love, a lot of hugs and kisses. And
a lot of scolding.
A lot of scolding. And I took a shower. And I was still feeling awful. Yeah, and
we were trying to get wet rags on his forehead.
Yeah, wet rags. I drank a lot of water when I got home.
He started shivering again and sweating quite a bit, so that was concerning.
Yeah. So I went to sleep pretty early, and then Malia made me get an IV the next morning.
Yeah, but we did have to check him throughout the night to make sure he was all right. Like, he was having a really hard time all night long. I think, did you sleep on the... No, you slept in the bed, and we slept on the couch. So my daughter and I moved to the couch and had him sleep in the bed because that room was the coldest. And then, he did not. He was such a baby about the IV, but...
I hate needles.
So many people experience dehydration out there, and so they have people that come to your house and they do an IV. So I was like, I will pay whatever I need to pay for, like, the best dehydration package you got. And so she put that in, and he perked up. Like, he... Everyone's like, wait, you didn't take him to the hospital? I'm like, no. Like, we don't have insurance for that.
I rubbed some dirt on it.
Yeah. I was like, no, he was not going to go to the hospital. He was going to get, like, a $200 IV and call it good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the needle sucked, though.
Yeah, he was a big baby about it. And I'm like, dude, your daughter's watching.
Oh, my gosh.
And we did not feel bad. I'm like, you did this to yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I felt bad. Yeah.
But all the cactus got taken out. And
yeah, all the cactus got taken out.
I think, was it before my birthday or was it after my birthday that you went? I just remember telling him, like, no, you're going to perk up. You're going to feel better because you're going to ruin my vacation if you don't.
Oh, my gosh.
We only get one a year.
So did you stay in contact with John? Like, how...
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that turn out?
So I got
Wednesday.
Yeah, I got his number, like I said, after. And when we got back, I was talking to Nikki and was like, I really would like to go out to eat with him or something. And Nikki was like, why don't we just bring him over here and make some food? So I texted him and was like, hey, my aunt and my wife would like to show... their appreciation for saving my life. If you would like to come over. Yeah, and so
we had this, like, feast.
Yeah, big feast, and he came over and we hung out. And since then we talk a lot. We text all the time, and we went to Arizona last year to meet up, but he had something come up and wasn't in Arizona at all.
It was in February.
Yeah, February. This year, February, sorry. And yeah. So we're in contact a lot. He's planning on coming up to Idaho, actually, and going on a hike.
This upcoming weekend, he's supposed to be here on Saturday, is what he told us. So we're hoping he is.
Yeah.
We can see him again.
Wow.
So
it's been almost a year and a half, I think.
That is incredible. And definitely some divine intervention in there. I want to point out, you are a little stubborn and you ignored a couple different maybe things early on where maybe God was trying to
some promptings.
Probably. But we do that all the time in life. And we ignore him and we think we know better a lot. I say we, like, it's mostly men that do that. Okay. But as his children, we do that. And in your story, that's a perfect example that it doesn't matter what we do, how many times we ignore him, how far off we've gotten, he still wants to help us. And he obviously still needs you here, right? And he sent John to save your life. Yeah. And that is exactly how life is. There are many times, I think, that he sends people to help give us the correction that we need from time to time. And sometimes it's a spouse, sometimes it's a parent, sometimes it's an angel. And that just proves once again and shows me how much our Father in heaven loves us and is in every detail of our life and constantly showing us and trying to correct us, right? Because I'm a dum-dum. Sounds like you're a dum-dum.
Yes, sir.
From time to time. But we need that. And that is the God that I know and love. And I just loved it. I loved hearing your story. I loved how real and how open and how willing you were to admit that I was dumb. But even people, listeners that aren't hikers, they can relate to that. They can relate to doing things and making choices that we shouldn't do sometimes, but we're often, as long as we have eyes to see and ears to hear, we can get back to where we need to. And I'm glad you're here to tell a story.
I am too. It was definitely divine and divine that I was able to be saved and rescued. I'm just grateful for God for giving me basically a second chance and sending John to me. I've learned a lot about myself and about being a father because of that experience, and about how much God loves me and actually does care about what happens to me and to my family. So.
And that you should listen to your wife always.
Always. Yeah, I have seen him many, 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 many times.
Yes.
Well, I'd love to hear a little bit of advice from both of you that you would give to somebody. You know, not everybody is normally in your exact situation preparing to go out on the hike, but maybe just a little advice, anything that you can offer our listeners.
I'd say just be prepared. Not necessarily just in situations like mine. Like, yes, I could have been a lot more prepared. I could have had more water and stuff in that sense, but also physically and mentally and spiritually prepared. Because spiritually, you never know when it could be a last day. You never know when you are going to meet God, like I almost did. So just be prepared in all things, and don't postpone becoming prepared just because you think you'll have more time, because you never know when your time will be up.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, you have anything to add?
Just, I guess not on top of that, but in terms of angels that, you know, God uses people and to be his hands on the earth. And I have seen that countless of times, and it's people that you're surrounded by and you don't even realize, because maybe it's not a huge miracle like in Colt's situation, how John was his literal angel. But I remember like becoming a mom and moving to a new area and just praying for friends. And I feel like they're my angels, you know, the way that they came into my life and have been in my life, and they do so much for me. So just like, I don't know, maybe taking the time to recognize angels in your own life, like they don't have to be some miraculous divine intervention that happens, but just the good people that surround you.
Absolutely. And then one more thing, we like to give our guests an opportunity to share a truth. I'd love to hear what you have to offer.
Something that you know to be true.
Just a simple truth that I know and have come to understand is that, you know, Jesus Christ is our Savior, and our Heavenly Father does care for his children, obviously, and want the best for us and our joy and happiness in this life. And that's something I still try to, you know, have to learn and to just recognize that. But and that there are many angels among us everywhere we go, and even in our home, ones that we can see and can't see. So
I think mine's very similar to Malia's, and the fact that I know God lives and loves us, and that he is our Heavenly Father. And just like any father, he loves us even when we are dumb, right? He cares for us. He wants what's best for us. And as long as we reach out to him, he's going to do exactly what's best for us. You know, looking back on this experience, I've learned so much and have almost been grateful that I've had it, even though it was a miserable experience. It was a very scary experience. But the fact that I was able to meet John and to have my testimony strengthened so much in this way is just a big, big eye-opener to me that God really does love us, and he knows every single one of his children.
Amen.
Amen.
Well, I want to take a second to, I hope John is listening, and I want to give him a big thank you and a big virtual hug, and thank him for being willing to go and do as God needed him to in that moment. I think that's something else that we all need to strive for, is to be prepared, like you said, and be in a position where we can be the hands and feet of our Father in heaven when he needs us to. And so, John, thank you for being an angel, not just to Colt and Malia, but to many. And I hope that we can all be the angels that he needs us to be. So thank you both again for joining us and sharing your story.
This was a true treasure for me. I love this. So thank you.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity to.
Yeah, this was not every day we get to share our testimony, I guess, with tons of listeners.
Well, a lot of people are about to know you, so you might be getting some reach outs.
You're a great person.
No problem.
He has learned.
I have learned. I love it. Yep. I've been watching a lot of Bear Grylls in case I ever get in that situation again.
Yes, we have.
That's part of the being prepared, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, research.
Research.
All right.
All right. Okay. We'll let everybody go. All right. Thanks again, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.